Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You're locked in to the WEEI Sports Radio Network with Brian Barrett.
All right, Brian Barrett with you for the next hour and a half or so. The phone number is 617-779-7937. If you want to weigh in on Chris Sale, the Mookie Betts situation, Kevin Garnett, which that was a hot-button topic this morning. I heard Mark James and Courtney Fallon and Wiggy talking about that. I talked about that last night. I really don't understand why people are so pissed off that Kevin Garnett's getting his jersey retired. I don't understand why, and I'm not even one of these people that you would categorize as a green teamer like my buddy Gilroy, but I don't understand why people are so mad about this. I'm with Gilroy. I don't understand why people are mad that Kevin Garnett's jersey's getting retired. And I would ask you this question when you're considering this. Who is Paul Pierce without Kevin Garnett? Paul Pierce is a guy that was a two-time All-NBA performer without Kevin Garnett. He was a really good player, eight-time All-Star, all that. Good player. But we would not hold Paul Pierce in such a high or at such a high level like we do now if he doesn't win that championship. That really is what made Paul Pierce's career, was winning the NBA Finals when he got Kevin Garnett. If Kevin Garnett doesn't win a championship here, okay, yeah, his career is not completely fulfilled. But we're talking about Kevin Garnett as one of the great players in NBA history. We're talking about him with the Charles Barkleys and the Karl Malones as the best player not to win a championship, right? He gets into that conversation. With Paul Pierce, he's just another guy that had a nice career in the NBA. He's nowhere near the level that Kevin Garnett is. And oh, by the way, Kevin Garnett, I get it. Everybody looks at, oh, Paul Pierce, finals MVP. Well, Kevin Garnett was the best player in the team. The reason that the Celtics were that dominant that year, they had the best defense in the NBA. If you look at the defensive efficiency that season, they were about 4 points better than everybody else, and Kevin Garnett was a defensive player of the year. Okay, and it's not like he had a bad NBA Finals. He averaged 18 and 11. The guy carried that team for the majority of the year. Now, of course, Pierce was great. Ray Allen was really good during the regular season, really good in the finals, sucked in the Eastern Conference portion of the playoffs. That's why you can't mention Ray Allen with the Kevin Garnett thing. He was bad in the first two series. Like, he was horrible in the first two series of the postseason. But why shouldn't the Celtics retire the guy that was the best player on a championship team? What's so bad about retiring that guy's number? Why do people have an issue with that? If he never comes here, Paul Pierce doesn't have his ring, and we're looking at Paul Pierce completely differently than we look at him now. That team had a identity of a defensive team. We never even thought of Paul Pierce as a defender before Kevin Garnett got here, so I don't understand why people are upset about that. The other thing I would mention briefly about the NBA is the All-Star festivities last night. What a joke for the NBA. That was an absolute disaster, what happened last night. And you get the All-Star game coming up tonight, but what happened last night was a complete debacle. Where Aaron Gordon doesn't win the dunk contest? Are you kidding me? That was a joke. And the reason he didn't win it is because the judges were planning to give him the same score as Derrick Jones Jr., but apparently Dwayne Wade didn't get the memo and he gave him a 9 instead of a 10. That's the reason that Aaron Gordon didn't win the dunk contest, or at least go to another dunk-off. What an embarrassing look for the NBA. Everybody last night watching the dunk contest knew that Aaron Gordon won. And the end result is actually Derrick Jones Jr. goes away with the hardware. I mean, what an absolute joke for the NBA to have that happen last night. It's a damn dunk contest. They couldn't judge the dunk contest, right? I mean, just so embarrassing for the league. We'll see if this new All-Star format works tonight. 617-779-7937 is the number. I do want to get to this, though. I mentioned this briefly about Chris Sale in terms of he was asked today about whether or not he thought the Astros were cheating when the Red Sox lost to them a couple of years ago. Remember, they lost in that five-game series. They ended up losing in Game 4 in 2017. Here's what Chris Sale said about it. Yeah, I think they ran out of fireworks in Houston. That guy on the train, I must have kept his job for another year. Remember, that's when the Astros hit a home run. They have that stupid train. That's what he's referring to. I was standing out on the mound. I was like, how the hell are they doing this? They're hitting breaking balls over the fence. They're hitting fastballs at their neck. And yeah, it crosses your mind. But what kind of idiot do you look like if they actually weren't? I'm not going to sit here and say they were because I don't have 100% evidence. I mean, I guess there is an investigation, but that specific scenario, I don't know. Now, it's interesting if you go back. So what I did is I went back and I looked at some of the at-bats in that game. So, by the way, in Alex Cora, he basically said in the past that the reason that when he came here, he said the reason that the Astros had success against Chris Sale is they weren't swinging at pitches in the inside portion of the plate. But really, now we all know the reason that they knew what was happening with Chris Sale is because they were banging on trash cans. They knew what pitches were coming. But just if you go back to that game, he gave up 7 earned runs in 5 innings. He gave up 3 home runs. So in the first inning, Bregman takes him deep, a slider on the outside part of the plate and located pretty well. Then Altuve hits a 96-mile-an-hour fastball middle-middle. But remember, there's banging going on where you can hear. And look, there's not proof of this one in particular, but that's what the Astros have been accused of doing. So then you go into the fourth inning of that game. Evan Gattis, who hit 263 that year, he doubled on a slider down in the zone. Evan Gattis, a guy that had a 311 on-base percentage, he's able to double on a nasty Chris Sale slider. Why? Because he knew it was coming. Marwin Gonzalez hammered a 97-mile-an-hour fastball for a double. And then in the fifth inning, Altuve homers at a fastball as a bad pitch, middle-middle. But nonetheless, you had banging, so you knew the fastball was coming, so he jumped all over him. Then you go to the sixth inning. He doubles again, does Evan Gattis. The 311 on-base percentage Evan Gattis doubles again on a fastball. So you just look at it and you say, well, maybe he just had a bad outing. But then I go back to what happened later on in the series. So Chris Sale, remember, he came out of relief in Game 4. That was the game at Fenway. He comes out of relief in Game 4. And if you look at what Chris Sale did in that game, he comes in and he goes 4 consecutive scoreless innings. Now, Bregman eventually did hit a home run off him in, what, the 8th inning of that game? But that, to me, was more about Chris Sale getting tired. He shut them down for 4 innings. 4 quick innings where he went out there and he shut down the Houston Astros. He was dominant in 4 innings. Now, eventually, he did give it up. But the point I'm making is Chris Sale at home after the Astros has already seen him. So the Astros saw him in Game 1, and then he comes back on the mound in Game 4, and they couldn't hit him for 4 innings. He was dominant. He looked like the Chris Sale that was a Cy Young contender for the majority of that season once he gets back at home. Why? Because the Astros didn't have the banging system when they were at Fenway. So this is just so bad for the Astros, because what's been happening over the past couple of days is you have all these players across Major League Baseball calling out the Astros, and Chris Sale didn't even bring it up. Chris Sale was asked about it, and he basically just gave you his honest opinion. That's what he usually does. I mean, Chris Sale, I do like the fact that he doesn't hold anything back. When he sucks, he'll say he sucks, but he doesn't hold anything back to the media. He just said, look, if you look at this, I thought it was a little fishy, essentially, is what he's saying, to paraphrase the quote I just gave you. It seemed odd that they were hitting fastballs at their neck and they were hitting all the breaking balls. They had a beat on Chris Sale. And clearly, if you compare the two games, especially considering they had already seen him, you compare the two games, it's pretty damn obvious. It's pretty damn glaring that clearly the Astros were cheating in that particular game 1 against the Red Sox. This week could not have gone worse for Major League Baseball, because the Astros got the punishment, of course, a while ago now, but then everybody reports to spring training and you have everybody across Major League Baseball basically weighing in on the situation. You have Cody Bellinger, the reigning defending National League MVP, saying that the Astros have a tainted championship. They stole a ring. Aaron Judge was basically, he had his MVP stolen by Jose Altuve because all season long at home, Altuve and the Astros were cheating. All this stuff is being said by a guy like Cody Bellinger, who is one of the faces of Major League Baseball. Just a horrible look. And then you have the Astros owner, Jim Crane, go up there and address the media. And I don't know who they got as a crisis manager, right? Like big firms, and you see it in sports, they'll have crisis managers come in and basically devise a plan on what they want people to do. Jim Crane's press conference could not have gone worse. He said that it didn't impact the games. And then after that, naturally, the follow-up question from Jeff Passan was, how can you say it didn't impact games? And he said, well, I never said it didn't impact games. It's like, Jim, you just said that it didn't impact games. So the owner actually was worse than any of the players in terms of what he was actually saying when he was up there. And then Rob Manfred does this 45-minute interview today. 45-minute interview. And it was horrible. And one of the points he made is he was asked by Carl Ravitch about players essentially not being punished for this. And one of the things that Rob Manfred pointed out, well, what they're going through now is worse than any punishment they could have gone through. Like, basically, the fact that they're getting criticized, like, they have a scarlet letter. Basically, all these players across the league and fans and retired players are criticizing the Astros and calling their title tainted and all that. And Rob Manfred saying that's worse than anything. No, what's worse than anything would be if you had a situation where Rob Manfred, as the commissioner of Major League Baseball, said, you know what? The Astros did not win the 2017 World Series because all the evidence points in that direction. And one of the other things that has really irritated me about this, and we'll find out what happens with the Red Sox here shortly, hopefully. I mean, I thought it was going to be last week and it hasn't come yet. But one of the things I would point out that really aggravates me about this situation, everybody keeps saying, well, everybody, or at least the people that the small minority of people that are defending the Astros, that there's cheating all across baseball and so many teams are doing this. Nobody was doing it to this level. Okay, you had Chaim Bloom, who was on Greg Hill earlier this week in Fort Myers. Great interview, by the way. I really am all in with the Chaim Bloom experiment. I really like the direction he's going with his team, talking about sustainability and not giving out all these bloated contracts. But nonetheless, Chaim Bloom, who was, of course, with the Rays organization, he was pointing out that, yeah, there was a lot of talk about the Astros going around Major League Baseball. So he's an executive in the league, and you have a narrative around the sport that something fishy is going on over there in Houston. Okay, so you had them banging on trash cans knowing exactly what pitch was coming. You have a former player that's suing the Houston Astros. Now, I don't think he's going to win the lawsuit, but the point being, think about how bad that looks for Major League Baseball, that you have a former player is saying basically because of this cheating scandal, he doesn't have a job anymore. Now, I'm not saying he's going to win the case, but think about how bad of a look that is for Major League Baseball. It's just an absolute debacle, everything that has happened this week, not only with the Astros, but for the league in general. Okay, for the league in general, this is a really, really bad look. And I feel bad for Chris Sale because that game against the Astros, I was killing him after that game where he was awful. But now that you look back at it, you're like, well, Altuve knew what was coming. Bregman knew what was coming. Evan Gattis knew what was coming. Marwin Gonzalez knew what was coming. Think about that. How bad does that look for Rob Manfred that he can't control what's going on in his sport? And without question, the Astros won the 2017 World Series. They cheated to get there. They cheated, 100% cheated to win a World Series. And these guys try to defend their title. I mean, give me a break. 617-779-7937. Let's get to Nick in Weymouth. What's up, Nick?
Hey, a few things about Mookie as he makes the transition out there. He had lifetime, he had 65 home runs at Fenway, 15 at Camden and Yards, and 10 at Toronto's. And I'm sure there's parks like that out there, although some of the small parks out there are actually pitcher stadiums. I think Frisco has a reputation of a pitcher stadium. But anyways, what he's going to miss because of the way he hits the ball, not just home runs, is the big green backdrop in the outfield. In other words, it isolates the baseball. Especially yeah. Night games. It's going to be a little bit different. Also, too, I don't know, does L.A. play a lot of day games because of their, you know, the weather conditions and stuff like that?
I mean, I don't think any more day games than most teams.
About the same. Okay, yeah. All I was thinking was the sun. Also, too, I wanted to ask, where do you think he'll be playing, center field or right field?
I would imagine right field. Bellinger's pretty good
okay,
at center.
Okay, yeah. So what I see there maybe is a lot more running, possibly. Not a dramatic difference in distance, but I think his arm and his running speed will be challenged there. Not that he'll come up short. I'm just saying.
Nick, I don't think that's going to be an issue for him. Mookie's such a good fielder, and he has such a good arm. I don't think it's going to be an issue playing in a big.
I just think it over time. But the big thing is you were talking about the length, the contract, and the money.
Right.
I'd say if he was 24 years old, I might be tempted, but he's 28. You know, and
exactly.
Physically, you're not going. I don't mean downhill dramatically. I'm just saying your speed and everything adjusts over time.
Well, at most, what are you getting? 5 good years out of the player, and then the last
exactly,
7
yeah,
years
yeah.
that he and won, it would have been bad.
Yeah, and that's about it. All right, thanks very much.
I appreciate the phone call, Nick. His line's open if you want to grab it at 617-779-7937. I don't have anything against Mookie. I just look at Mookie as somebody that, based on his behavior, even though he's saying he liked it here, he didn't want to be here. A guy that wanted to be here is Xander Bogaerts, and he went to the organization. Remember, he went to the Red Sox at the beginning of last season and said, hey, can we get a contract done? He saw all these other guys, basically, Dave Dombrowski is like Oprah. You get a car, you get a car, you get a car. You get a contract, you get a contract, you get a contract. And Bogaerts is like, I'd like a contract. So he went there and he asked the Red Sox for a contract extension. And they gave one to him. And by the way, right now that looks way below market. That's like the only good thing that Dave Dombrowski did last year. Mookie Betts, the fact that he wanted to get to free agency tells you that he wants to leave. And quite frankly, I don't believe that he wanted the pressure that comes with being the face of this organization long term. I believe he saw all the criticism David Price got. And again, I get it. The Dennis Eckersley thing, that's on Price. A lot of this stuff, all these injuries that Price is talking about, allergies, all that stuff's on Price. I understand that. But having that big contract, he was the guy that most people went after and criticized, and rightfully so. He underperformed for the contract. I don't believe that Mookie Betts ever wanted to be in that position where he could get criticized after getting this big, massive contract. And then when he didn't perform in the postseason, he would start to get some of that criticism that David Price had gotten for so many years. So when I look at Mookie, I don't believe that he really wanted to be here long term. I believe what Mookie is looking at is he said, you know what, I can go to LA and even the Dodgers. Like, there's not a lot of pressure playing for the Dodgers. That's a Lakers town, first of all. And it's not like playing for Boston or New York or Philadelphia. It's not, or Chicago, right? It's not that type of craziness in terms of the fans. And Mookie could say, yeah, you know what? I already won a World Series. I could, if the Padres offer me the most money, I could go there. Hey, I'm from Nashville. If Atlanta's willing to pay some money for me, I'd go to Atlanta. And those organizations, especially teams like the Padres and the Atlanta Braves, they're just like, oh, we're so happy that we have Mookie Betts. They're just happy to get a star on the team. When we look at it from our perspective with the Red Sox, it's like, okay, if you sign Mookie Betts, he's got to perform. That's how we look at this thing. Different organizations don't have the same viewpoint as we as Red Sox fans have. 617-779-7937, the number. Let's get to Nate Nakar. What's up, Nate?
Yes, hey, I'm calling in regards to Mookie Betts' void on the Red Sox. Now, there's a couple of big talent coming up in C.J. Chatham and Bobby Dalbec. Now, C.J. Chatham playing the infield, could he potentially take over Mookie Betts' spot in the outfield, because it's similar to what Mookie Betts did as a second baseman going to an outfielder?
Well, Nate, I appreciate the phone call. It looks like Verdugo is going to get that spot in right field. And now, he may not be ready for opening day, if you listen to Ron Renicki yesterday, and Verdugo himself talked about the injury where he may not be ready for opening day. Chris Sale may not be ready for opening day. So this team looks... Oh, and by the way, Xander Bogaerts is dealing with a little bit of an ankle injury to begin the season. He injured that when he was training in Aruba. This team is completely banged up entering the season. But my whole thing with the Red Sox right now going forward is I am 100% in on Chaim Bloom. And everything he said earlier this week on Greg Hill's show, and that's a tough spot to go on that show after you traded away Mookie Betts. And a lot of the fan base was upset about that, myself not in that majority of fans that are upset Mookie's gone, but that's a tough spot to be in. And it's a tough spot to come into an organization if you're Chaim Bloom. And basically, the number one thing you have to do when you get here is, yeah, so you know that guy that won the MVP 2 years ago? We got to trade him. Like, that's the thing you have to do right away. And oh, by the way, when you trade him, we need to get under the CBT. So can you put David Price's contract in the trade with Mookie Betts? That's what Chaim Bloom had to do. But he talked about sustainability. That's what's intriguing to me about the Red Sox going forward is, can he treat this like, in a way, a small market team, but then when he needs to cash in, he can also cash in. That's where I think this idea of Chaim Bloom wanting sustainability to be like the Dodgers, that's the comparison he made. Be like the Los Angeles Dodgers, who I get it, they haven't won a World Series in a long time, but think about the past 5 years with Andrew Friedman running that team. They're in it every year. 2 years they played for the World Series, and we're finding out they probably should have won the 2017 World Series. So they're in the hunt every year. I'd much rather that happen with the Red Sox long term. Look, it's great that they won the World Series in 2018. Nobody's ever going to take that away from the Red Sox, or maybe who knows with this investigation. Maybe that's the wrong time to say that. But nonetheless, when you look at it and you start to think about how they did it, that doesn't sustain success for a 10 to 15 year period. And that's what Chaim Bloom wants to do. And that's what I applaud in Chaim Bloom's basically vision for this organization. It's not just about 1 year or 2 years. They've gotten 4 World Series since, what, 2004, the first one that they've got since in ages, right? So they've gotten 4 recently. Let's see if you can build this and be a contender for a decade rather than be a contender and then suck like you did last year. All right, a lot more to get into. I do want to get into one concern I have about Chris Sale. If you want to weigh in on the Tom Brady situation or Mookie Betts, certainly welcome to do so. The number is 617-779-7937. We'll get you a trending in just a second here.
OMF live broadcast begins this Wednesday at 2 from Red Sox spring training. Now here's what's trending on WEEI.
Bourbon and Bacon is back, and it's bigger than ever. Coming Saturday, March 21st at the Encore Boston Harbor, sample bacon-inspired dishes and try some of the best bourbon in the country. It's Bourbon and Bacon presented by KM. Tickets are on sale now at baconevent.com. That's baconevent.com. Here's what's trending now on WEI and WEI.com. Sox interim manager Ron Renneke says Chris Sale may not be ready to start opening day. Sale is recovering from the flu and pneumonia, tough bid, which delayed his start to spring training. Sale will be looking to bounce back from that rough 2019. He was just 6-11 last year with a 4.40 ERA. His season, of course, was cut short due to the elbow injury. A couple of Celtics will participate in tonight's All-Star game. Jason Tatum will play for Team LeBron, and Kemba Walker is a member of Team Giannis. You can catch the game right here on WEI. Coverage beginning at 7:30. The Seas return to action on Friday night. They'll head to Minnesota for a date with the Timberwolves. The Green is 38-16 at the break, which is third in the East. The Bees beat the Rangers 3-1. Chris Wagner, Charlie Coyle, and Patrice Bergeron. The goal scorer is Bergeron, the empty netter. The Black and Gold will be on the road to play the Oilers in Edmonton on Wednesday night. That's what's trending now on WEI and WEI.com.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is the WEEI Sports Radio Network with Brian Barrett.
All right, if you want to join us, the number to do so, 617-779-7937. All right, so I told you I am concerned about one thing with Chris Sale, and that is the thing that we're always concerned with this guy is the health. So today, Ron Renneke basically announces that there's a good possibility that Chris Sale's not going to be ready for opening day. And I'm thinking to myself, hold on, it's February 16th. Opening day is not until March 26th. And you're already telling us that Chris Sale, there's a possibility he's not going to be ready for opening day. This is what Ron Renneke said today. Quote, he still doesn't have his strength back. He played catch today. He stretched it out. He also did that yesterday. So I think he's progressing along fine. We're going to still go a little bit easy with him. Whenever we can get him to start up, it would be silly for us to try to push him to come back sooner than probably he should physically. It's not worth taking a risk on having him opening day exactly, and we're pushing him to get there. He's important to us as we go through the season and hopefully get into the playoffs, and we got to keep him strong to push anyone nowadays. It doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to any of us. Now, I agree with what Ron Renneke is saying on principle in terms of you don't want to push the guy and risk injury. So I totally understand where Ron Renneke is coming from with that. But isn't it just a little odd? Isn't it just a little concerning that we've been dealing with all these injuries for Chris Sale, and now we're already talking about the beginning of the season, and the reason that he may not be able to go is because he came into spring training with pneumonia and the flu, and finally he's getting back. He said he lost 6 pounds. Apparently he's going to cook some ribs, and he thinks that he's going to put that weight back on. I can't tell because the guy's always been so damn thin. I can't tell that he lost the weight, to be honest with you. But nonetheless, the point being that we're already talking about Chris Sale not being ready for opening day. But the one positive I take out of this is maybe the Red Sox have finally come to the realization organizationally that they have to treat this pitcher differently, right? Because if they want to get something out of Chris Sale long-term, remember, this is the first year of that five-year contract that Dave Dombrowski handed out to Chris Sale. This is the first year of that contract, right? So if you want to get something out of Chris Sale, you're going to have to alter your plan. Because if you look at what's happened to Chris Sale over the past couple of years, of course, we had the issue last year where he goes down with the elbow injury and he's not a factor in September for the team. And if you look at the previous seasons, that same type of thing was happening with Chris Sale, where if you go back to the 2017 season, or I should say the World Series year first in 2018, remember he had the shoulder issue that season, which cost him a bunch of time, and he really only pitched, what, 15 and a third in the postseason. So last year out with the elbow injury, the year before that, the World Series year, it's a shoulder issue. And the year before that, in 2017, his first year as a member of the Red Sox, he was horrible in August, and he wasn't that good in September. Chris Sale's numbers were not the same as they were earlier in the season. So we have 3 years where the first year the production goes down, the second year it's an injury, and last year it's an injury as well. So now we have 3 years of data that tells us Chris Sale is, in all likelihood, not going to make it to the finish line. So I do applaud the Red Sox for saying, okay, we're going to make sure this guy, we have a specific plan with Chris Sale, because what we need for Chris Sale is we need him to finish the season. Because even his 1 year where he did finish the season, he didn't finish the season strong. That's what we need from Chris Sale. We need a good Chris Sale at the end of the season. So finally, the organization, Ron Renicke, I'm sure Heim Bloom has a lot to say about this in terms of the plan for Chris Sale. They're trying to make sure the guy is healthy long term, because obviously everything else that they were doing with Chris Sale over the past 3 years, it hasn't been working. I'm not saying that's all on the Red Sox. I'm just saying, based on the fact that this guy, Chris Sale, is not durable whatsoever, he's the opposite of durable, he's injury prone, you got to do something differently in terms of trying to get this guy to the finish line. And the other thing that I would point out with Sale is I almost feel like what the Red Sox have to do is they need to take a page out of the Kawhi Leonard playbook. I almost feel as if Chris Sale needs to be load managed. And that can be every once in a while, skip a start, maybe at the All-Star break, get him an extended period of time off where he doesn't make his last start before the break and he doesn't make his start coming out of the break. Just get this guy some time off during the season, a start here and there, so you know he can be at least somewhat healthy during the stretch run at the end of the season. And here's the other thing. You could say, well, Brian, it's not getting the money that you're paying Chris Sale. Well, here's the thing, though. Do you want Chris Sale to be broken down at the end of the season? Because everything else you've tried in previous seasons, it has not worked. So I'm all on board trying to load manage Chris Sale so you can get him to the end of the season. Now, a couple of other things as it pertains to Sale coming into this year. Now, what we saw from Chris Sale last year is the numbers just fell off. And you can blame that on the injury, whatever you want to do. The numbers were bad. It's very similar to the breakdown that Tim Lincecum had later on in his career. Now, the issue with Tim Lincecum is he never really developed another pitch. He didn't change his approach at all. And the way I feel about Chris Sale is, obviously, we've seen it the past 3 years at 28, 29, and 30, his body betrayed him. His body broke down. So with Chris Sale, the way he's doing things right now, he's not going to be able to be a productive pitcher for this 5-year contract if he continues to pitch the same way he's been pitching essentially his whole baseball life. He needs to change the approach, because what we saw from Chris Sale, very similar to what you saw with Tim Lincecum, is we saw flashes of the great Chris Sale last year. Remember, he had the 17 strikeout game against the Rockies. He had a game against the Blue Jays where he had 12 strikeouts, 6 scoreless innings. So we saw flashes of that. But the problem is you don't see it on a consistent basis. You don't see it every fifth day. You may see it one start, then he could stink the next start. The next day after that, maybe okay. And then after that, he may stink again. So what you need is more consistency from Chris Sale. And the only way I see that happening is if Chris Sale changes the way that he pitches. And what I mean by that is he needs to add an additional pitch. So he has a changeup. And if you go back to the start he had against the Blue Jays that I just referenced, where he had 12 strikeouts, it was 6 scoreless innings. If you go back to that start, one of the things that Chris Sale said after the game is he was using his changeup as an out pitch. So he was using his changeup to get strikeouts, okay? Not just a show pitch where you're just showing that so you can have the team thinking that you're going to throw a changeup, but he was actually using the changeup as an out pitch. Pretty much Chris Sale for the majority of his career, he mixes up the changeup here and there, but he's been a two-pitch pitcher. It's fastball slider, and he's been so damn good with those two pitches, he didn't need anything else. But at this point in his career, somebody needs to have the conversation with Chris Sale. Listen, Chris, we've done this for 3 damn years. And every year, you're breaking down at the end of the season. So you need to evolve. That Chris Sale that was Cy Young caliber, that Chris Sale that was leading the league in strikeouts and doing all this, that guy doesn't exist anymore. You can't do that on a consistent basis, on a game-to-game basis. You need to change up your approach. You need to develop a third pitch, okay? And you also need to pitch to contact more, because right now, clearly what we're finding out the past 2 years, it's a shoulder issue, it's an elbow issue. Your body is not going to hold up. So developing that third pitch would be so beneficial to Chris Sale. And I look at a guy like, for example, and look, this guy is not as good as Chris Sale is right now when he made the change and he was able to sustain his career. CeCe Sabathia evolved as a pitcher. And I get CeCe Sabathia was not good last year. But if you look at the reason CeCe Sabathia, and I get it, he wasn't the premium top end of the rotation guy at the end of his career. But if you look at what CeCe Sabathia was able to do, he extended his career by developing a cutter. And if you look at CeCe Sabathia, it's really impressive to see what he did in the latter portion of his career, because he went from being a flat-out power pitcher to a guy that evolved and he was more of a finesse pitcher. He was more willing to pitch to contact. Now, obviously, he wasn't as good as the previous CC Sabathia, but he was still a pitcher that was going out there and he's giving you 200 innings most season. That's what you need from Chris Sale, is you need a guy that can have the conversation with somebody where somebody can get in his ear and say, hey, Chris Sale needs to evolve as a pitcher. You need to develop a third pitch. You need to pitch to contact more, because what we're doing right now, the way you're approaching it, it's not going to work long term. The thing with Chris Sale, he's not Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer, where Verlander's 225 pounds. Scherzer's 215 pounds. So the reason those guys as power pitchers can basically have sustained success at advanced ages is because they get so much power generated from their legs. Chris Sale doesn't have that. You look at his approach, and it's what's made him great, but it's that whip action with the arm. It's that crossfire angle. It's not a lot of legs like these other guys, and he doesn't have that strength in his legs to begin with. So he's not going to age like Verlander and like Scherzer have. What he needs to do is he needs to stop trying to be Randy Johnson like he's been for the majority of his career. He needs to channel some Tom Glavine, some Greg Maddux to pitch to contact more and become better in terms of his location. Because here's the thing with Chris Sale. If you watch him pitch, even in his prime, he's never been great in terms of location. It's just the stuff was so damn good that he was making guys miss. He could miss his spot and guys still wouldn't hit it because that slider, it had all that sweeping action. It was just so damn nasty, and the fastball was just ridiculous, and that had silly movement on it as well. So Chris Sale could miss his spots in the past and guys wouldn't hit it. That's not the same Chris Sale that we saw last year. That Chris Sale, if he misses a spot, guys are hitting it. So he's going to be a more controlled pitcher. He's got to develop another pitch, because here's the reality of the situation. You can complain about the dumb contract, and I've done that for a year. I've basically done that since Chris Sale signed the contract. But here's the reality. We're now stuck with that contract. So you need to get the best version of Chris Sale. And my advice to the Red Sox would be load manage the guy. Don't overwork him, because clearly what we're seeing, he can't handle the same amount of innings that he did early in his career. And then secondarily, somebody's got to get it through his head that he needs to develop a third pitch and he needs to pitch to contact more. 617-779-7937 is the number. Let's get to Bob in Londonderry. What's up, Bob?
Hey, hi. How are you doing tonight?
Good.
Hey, I was only calling in because I'm not really the biggest sports guy, but I'll say one thing. I think reality has settled in with the Red Sox in lieu of what's happened to the two players that have left. I think this season is going to be an absolute disaster. Even if things go good, I think you people are going to be in for a big surprise, and I'm not sure, much like what we saw with the Patriots and so on and so forth. I'm not too sure. I think things are going to go much worse than anybody's even expecting.
Bob, I don't think most people are optimistic about the Red Sox season. I don't think anybody's putting them in the World Series contender category right now.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, so I appreciate the phone call, Bob. His line's open if you want to grab it at 617-779-7937. I don't believe the fan base thinks that this team is going to be competitive in winning a World Series this year. Now, you could see this team possibly getting a wild card spot if they get some of the right breaks. And I still believe, even without Mookie in this lineup, that this is going to be one of the top five offenses in Major League Baseball. You still have J.D. Martinez. You still have Rafael Devers, who, oh, by the way, was the best hitter on the team last year. It wasn't Mookie Betts. Xander Bogaerts had an outstanding season. He took a step forward last year. Andrew Benintendi's got to be better than he was last season. He was horrible last season. And, oh, by the way, he's not going to be starting the season hitting leadoff, you would hope. I mean, I don't believe Ron Renicki is going to make the same mistake that Alex Cora did last year. So I believe this is going to be a good offense. A lot is going to come down to Chris Sale, Nathan Eovaldi. Obviously, Erod made a massive step last year, where Erod, he's the guy that you can rely on the most in terms of the rotation, because he's the guy that's been the most durable out of this group. He had a really good season. He's one of the guys that took a step forward last year. So it's going to be, what can you get out of this pitching staff, and can you keep Chris Sale relatively healthy? And the thing that the Red Sox have to realize, and I believe that Chaim Bloom plays a major factor in this, you have to realize that the plan that you've been working with Chris Sale for all these years, just letting him go out there and throw every fifth day, it's not working. They have to evolve in terms of their approach with Chris Sale and the way that they handle the guy, because he doesn't have that big frame, that big body where he can last deep into seasons like Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer and those type of pitchers. So somebody's got to work with Chris Sale in terms of, first of all, the amount of innings he's throwing and the way that he pitches. He needs to make a change. This is what happens late in players' careers. So, and this is a cross-sport comparison. If you look at some of the great players in NBA history, like, for example, a guy like Michael Jordan, at the beginning of his career, he comes into the league, and he's the most athletic player in the sport, and he's beating you with his athleticism. He's dunking on everybody. But what happens as his career goes on? He evolves in terms of his footwork. He works in that low post area. He's got all the fadeaways, etc., right? He honed his craft. He developed his skill. This is the time in Chris Sale's career where he has to realize if he wants to have another 4 to 5 years of success in this league, the way that he's been doing it for all these years, the mileage has caught up to him. He can't do it long term this way. That's why somebody has to get with Chris Sale and convince him that the way that you've done it all this time, it's the wrong way to do it now. That was fine to pitch this way when you were 25 and 26, but now you need a third pitch. You need to pitch to contact more. All right, a lot more to get into. If you want to hop on board, the number is 617-779-7937. What are your expectations for Chris Sale this year? If you want to weigh in on the Tom Brady conversation, am I crazy to think that he's better to go somewhere else in terms of reaching his goal, which is to play till he's 45? I believe that it's better for him to go to a different organization where he's got more weapons. Maybe I'm crazy. If you want to weigh in on that, certainly can. The number is 617-779-7937. Brian Barrett with you right here on WEI.
You're locked in to the WEEI Sports Radio Network. Sports Radio Network with Brian Barrett.
All right, we're with you until 7:30 when All-Star Game coverage will take over. The number 617-779-7937. I do find it odd that Kemba Walker and Jason Tatum are on opposite teams. I get it. They did a draft. I watched it. But it is kind of weird that guys that are on the same team during the regular season, they're on different teams in the All-Star game. It's just kind of weird. You know what? Team Giannis versus Team LeBron. Like, the first year they did the draft, I thought it was cool. I'm kind of over it now. I'd rather they just go back to East against West. I guess the draft is kind of cool to watch, but at this point, I'm kind of over it. 617-779-7937 is the number. Let's get to John in Providence. What's up, John? All right, let's try Alex in Norwood. What's up, Alex?
How you doing?
Good.
Good. So I just have a question for you. Do you think the Patriots will give up Brady a 2-year deal?
No, my prediction is I think he's leaving.
Okay. Yeah, mine too. I think if they didn't give him a 2-year deal last year, why would they this year? You know?
Yeah, well, Alex, I mean, it even goes back further than that. If you think about it, 2017, after Brady's MVP season, he wants an extension from Bill Belichick, and Bill says, no, we'll give you these incentives, and he reaches none of those incentives, but he doesn't get the extension that ultimately he wanted. Last year, after a Super Bowl season, he wants an extension. He doesn't get the extension. So I don't know why all of a sudden, after one of the worst seasons that Brady's had in recent history, all of a sudden Bill's like, you know what, this is the time where we give Tom a 2 to 3 year extension. It just doesn't add up for what Bill Belichick's done over the past few years.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. I don't think that's happening. And exactly, Bill will use that ammo where his numbers have declined and, you know, present that to him and say, you know, we can't do it. We'll offer you 1 year. And, you know, I think Tom's with the options he's going to have.
Right. And Alex, the other thing to consider if you're Tom Brady or if you're just looking at it through Brady's lens is like, all right, for the past 2 years, I've been singing for my supper after giving this organization my entire career, 6 Super Bowls. And 3 MVPs.
Sure.
I'm singing for my supper, begging for a contract. And I get these other teams. I already got a report out there that Larry Fitzgerald Sr. has that the Vegas Raiders are going to offer the guy $60 million over 2 years. So why would I continue to sing for my supper? And Alex, the other thing is, it's always been the best situation for Brady to come back here. You can make a very compelling argument that it's not anymore, that it's not the same team it used to be.
Absolutely. No, I agree. I think he is, you know, sad to say, I mean, and the Patriots are going to spin it where, you know, it's, you know, we offered him this, he didn't accept, and you know, it's just not going to be a good look, and they're gonna take a hit, you know, with the public. But I think he's gone. Yeah,
no doubt. Hey, I appreciate the phone call, Alex. The number is 617-779-7937. The one thing for sure is this is going to be completely fascinating. To me, this is the biggest story in the sports world in terms of free agency since LeBron had the first decision. Remember, he had that television special with Jim Gray. And ironically, Brady's very good friends with Jim Gray. Maybe he can do a television special like LeBron James did. I'm sure that would go over very well. But that really is, even the Peyton Manning one, there wasn't many teams. We knew it was going to be Tennessee. San Francisco, you knew he wasn't going there because he didn't want to play in the NFC against Eli. So you knew it was either going to be Denver or Tennessee. So it really wasn't as compelling. And Peyton Manning was coming off the neck injury. This is Tom Brady, the greatest player in the history of the sport, leaving the team that he won 6 Super Bowls with, if he does decide to leave. But either way, if he takes these meetings, it's a massive story. It's like Brett Favre's story times about like 100, how big this story is. Let's get to Jim in a car. What's up, Jim?
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Hi. You know, I've noticed something about Chris Sale over the last couple of years. At first, when you look at him, you think he's kind of like Randy Johnson, big, tall, rangy, throwing sidearm. But when he follows through, or when he makes his pitch, his right foot really heads towards first base, and he throws across his body, basically. And pitchers like that, I've known enough about baseball and I've talked to enough people. That's a tough way to throw the ball.
Yeah, and Jim, it's that crossfire thing. And he has got all that whip action with his shoulder as well. So you could certainly see why his body's starting to break down. Like, just I remember back in when his White Sox days when he's pitching, you thought the guy was going to break the way through it. Now, it's a credit to him that he lasted this long pitching that way. I just don't think that he can continue to pitch the way he always has and have long-term success. That's why I mentioned the fact that he needs to develop another pitch and use it more. I know he throws a changeup, but he doesn't feature it that much, and I believe he's going to use that more. And the other thing he needs to do is he has to come to the realization he's not the same guy he was anymore, so he needs to start pitching to contact. This is what happens when pitchers get older. You need to start pitching to contact more. That's what he needs to figure out.
But if you're throwing the long way for the way your body's built, no matter how you change to sort of accommodate your aging and whatnot, I still think you're going to get hurt. Even if you're throwing, 88 to 91, I think it's inevitable what's going to happen. But that's just my opinion.
It's a very fair point, Jim, and I appreciate the phone call. And the other thing that you think about is, all right, so Sale had a shoulder injury 2 years ago, and he had an elbow injury last year. So he's got all this damage already that he's done to his shoulder and his elbow. And I know they can say, oh, he's progressing well, it looks good. Well, I remember when he got shut down with a shoulder injury a couple of years ago. Now I get it, he came back into the postseason and whatnot. But if you think about that, last year at the beginning of the season, it looked like he was still dealing with that shoulder issue. He did not look like the same pitcher, and then all of a sudden he has an elbow injury. It just seems like as his career goes on, he's going to continue to deal with these issues. And I mentioned the fact that he needs to be more of a control pitcher now. He needs to pitch to contact more. But the question you have to ask yourself with Sale, who has never been the most accurate pitcher, is he going to be able to do that? And the other thing I look at with Sale is, unlike Greg Maddux and Tom Glavine, who were always thinking through their starts, right? They were setting up hitters all the time. Chris Sale's never been that type of pitcher. Chris Sale never shakes off the catcher. Whatever the sign is, he throws it. How rare is it to see Chris Sale actually shake something off? He never does. I remember we had this whole argument last year about, Vasquez is the reason that Sale's not having success. Remember that was a thing? And then they had Sandy Leon as his personal catcher, and it still didn't change anything. But Sale never has been the guy, and I'm not saying this is a criticism. He didn't need to because he's one of the best pitchers in Major League Baseball. But he never has been this guy that's like thinking through a start, and that's where I think he has to change. So it's a fair question to ask, is he ever going to be able to do that and basically change the approach that he has? It's a very fair question, and we don't know the answer until he actually tries. But I do know this. The way that he's been pitching his whole career, it's not going to work long-term anymore because he continues to break down. 617-779-7937, the number. Let's get to Tim. He's in Lowell tonight. What's up, Tim?
Hey, good evening, Brian. You know, I want to go back to the Mookie trades talk for
sure.
A second. You know what? The Red Sox mishandled that trade. Now, they didn't make a mistake in trading him.
Mm-hmm.
The mistake they made, Brian, was they should have traded him at the trading deadline last summer. And I said that on this station in late May. I said at the time, if they fall 10 or 12 games out of first place, look to trade him. You'll get maximum value for him because you'll be trading him to a team that will have him for two playoff runs, and you also had five or six teams competing for a playoff spot, which would have driven up the price.
Well, Tim, and it's interesting too, Tim, did you see the story that came out this week where essentially the Red Sox won three consecutive games over the Yankees and they felt like, okay, now we get a chance, we're going to make a run. And they were actually chatting to the Dodgers about possibly a trade at that point. So if they had actually not won three games in a row, to your point, they probably would have got a bigger return from Mookie and maybe they would have considered trading him then. But the one thing I will say, Tim, is I don't believe even if they won those games and they decided they were going to have these conversations with the Dodgers, I don't think they would have had the balls at that time to pull the trigger because I think they would have said, we can't be trading the reigning MVP for a team that just won the World Series. I don't think they would have done it. And even if you're, Tim, look, I understand what you're saying in terms of it would have been the right thing to do. I understand your point, but I'm saying I don't think the Red Sox would have done it.
Help of the team,
right,
it would have been the right thing to do.
Yes, I understand your point, Tim, but I'm saying I don't think the Red Sox would have done it.
And Brian, I understand their point of view.
Yeah.
They won the World Series. If they thought they were going to have a shot at making it to the playoffs, they wanted to take every shot, and I understand that. But for the long-term best interest of the team, they should have made that move. Because once he turned down a $270 million 10-year contract in the previous season, they knew right then and there he was not staying. Oh, they should have known it.
Yeah, well, and I appreciate the call, Tim. He turned down originally that $100 million deal all those years ago, and then he turned down the $200 million deal, and they were more than $100 million off this time around in terms of what the team was willing to offer and what Mookie Betts was basically wanting, which was $420 million, which is just absolutely ridiculous. Let's get to Dave in a car. What's up, Dave?
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
Doing all right. I agree with you with the Red Sox offense. I think they're going to be fine this year. And like you said, top five offense. And I'm also optimistic that Sale's going to put in a decent year. I think the real Achilles heel with this team, which it was last year, is the bullpen. I think going in and having Brandon Workman as the closer and not really have a good idea of the setup man and how that's going to work, I think it's going to kill him and it's going to happen pretty quick.
Well, hey, Dave, how about the fact that they actually named a closer this time? Remember last year they said, oh, we don't need a closer. Now at least they named a closer this time.
Yeah, I guess that's true, but I'm not too comfortable with Brandon as the closer. I'd rather have him as a setup guy.
Really? Look, I appreciate the call, Dave. Workman had a phenomenal season last year. I don't know why anybody would be concerned about. Now, maybe what you say is, all right, it's only 1 year of productivity, if you will, and he needs to do it for a longer period of time. But right now, with who you have on this team, I have no issue whatsoever with Workman going into the bullpen. He was great last year. He had a phenomenal season. Again, he was one of the bright spots on this team. The rest of the bullpen, I mean, that was a mess for the majority of the season, but Workman was absolutely outstanding. All right, a lot more to get into, including something that has me really excited about Chaim Bloom taking over in terms of running this organization. I'll get into that in a little bit. If you want to weigh in on Tom Brady, you certainly can. And the Chris Sale situation. Are you concerned that we're already hearing that he could possibly miss his opening day start? 617-779-7937. Brian Barrett with you for the next half hour or so right here on WEI.
You're locked in to the WEI Sports Radio Network.
Restrictions that we worked under with the Rays, I think, forced us to be more creative. But what we've seen, I think, over the last 5-10 years in the game, which is honestly, it's the scariest thing for small market clubs, is when large market clubs take those principles and apply them. We weren't really over there looking to define ourselves by our limitations. We had those limitations. It forced us to be more creative. But at the end of the day, we were just trying to win as many games as we could with what we had. And every team should be trying to do that. So if there is something, you know, when the players take the field, there's no dollar signs, right?
Right.
It's just a game of baseball. So if there's something that can help you win a game in a smaller market, it should be able to help you win a game in a larger market. I think the difference here, obviously, is that, you know, when you are doing things right, you have more resources, you have more options, you should be able to create more options to help you win. But a lot of the things that with the Rays have helped, you know, over the years to eke out those extra 2, 3, 4 games over the course of the season that could be the difference between making the postseason and not, there's no reason why any club can't find their way to similar innovations regardless of the market size.
All right, that was Chaim Bloom earlier this week on the Greg Hill Show. Great interview. I am all in on Chaim Bloom. This is exactly the type of guy that the Red Sox needed right now. And I know that Dave Dombrowski gets a bad rap. And look, outside of last year, he did a good job here. And he did what the organization asked him to do. You knew he was going to gut the farm system to get star-level players like Craig Kimbrel, like Chris Sale. And he did that, and they won a World Series. That's what he was asked to do. Now, last year, I don't know what happened with the Eovaldi contract, the Sale contract. No closer, no bullpen. Like, it was a mess, okay? Nobody can defend last year. And the fact that he didn't do anything at the deadline in terms of all he did was got Andrew Kastner. He didn't get an additional bullpen arm. It was a joke. But other than that, he basically did what they told him to do. But this is what the Red Sox need now, is a guy like Chaim Bloom, and in particular, this guy, Chaim Bloom. I loved what he said about you can take some of the small market principles and take them here into a major market. That's what the Dodgers are doing. That's why the Dodgers are in the hunt every season, because Andrew Friedman, who Chaim Bloom used to work for, came from Tampa. He took the same principles that he had in Tampa, applied them to what he's doing in Los Angeles. That's why they've been the most dominating team in the National League for an extended period of time. And I get it. They don't have a World Series yet, although they should have won in 17 if you look at what the Astros were doing that season. But they're always in the hunt. And that's what I want to see from the Red Sox going forward. And I think it's worth mentioning some of the things that Chaim Bloom has done recently. So first of all, just think about this. They had the smallest payroll in all of Major League Baseball last year. The Red Sox had the highest payroll. And the Rays were in the postseason. And oh, by the way, they took the Astros to 5 games. Okay, that's how good Chaim Bloom was at putting this team together. And I just want to illustrate some of the stuff he did when he was in Tampa real quickly, just to make my point. They used openers because they didn't have enough starting pitchers. And remember, everybody, when the Tampa Bay Rays announced that a couple of years ago, They mocked the Rays. You can't win that way in Major League Baseball. You can't have openers. Now look at all the big market teams across Major League Baseball, like the one here, the Red Sox. Everybody basically uses openers now. The Yankees used openers in the postseason last year. So that's something that Chaim Bloom and the Tampa Bay Rays put into their arsenal, if you will, and everybody across Major League Baseball basically copied that. Another thing, think about some of these business deals he made. They signed a guy like Charlie Morton last year. 2 years, $30 million with a third-year team option. And the reason they only gave him 2 years is because he's an older pitcher, right? But if you look at this, he was in the Cy Young race last year. So they evaluated him, they say, 2 years, $30 million. And basically, he turned out to be one of the better signings last offseason. Think about the guy that they signed in Charlie Morton compared to the guy that the Red Sox re-signed in Nathan Eovaldi. Not even close, who gave their team more value. So it's moves like that around the margins. And then you think about this trade he made a couple of years ago. They traded Chris Archer for Austin Meadows and Tyler Glasnow. Meadows last year hit .291 with 33 home runs, and Glasnow was a monster until he went down with an injury last year. He had a .178 ERA before he was injured. And by the way, last year, Archer for Pittsburgh, .519 ERA. So those are some of the moves that Chaim Bloom has made over the past couple of years that has me excited about the direction of where the Red Sox are going with him in charge. Now, here's the one concern I have, and I feel like most people will agree with me. Will the ownership group actually let Chaim Bloom live this thing out? Meaning, is the ownership group, if you have a subpar 2020 season, like I believe most of us expect, it's not going to be that good. But if in 2021 it's not that good, is ownership going to say to Chaim Bloom, hey, you got to make some big moves. Hey, you got to go after some big fish. So that's the concern I have. The one concern I have is not Chaim Bloom. I believe Chaim Bloom's going to do an outstanding job here. The one concern I would have is, does ownership give him a different edict midway through his tenure here and say, hey, we want to do what Dave Dombrowski did a couple of years ago. So after you rebuild the farm system, let's trade some guys away. Let's pick up some big name guys and let's give out all these big contracts again. That's my fear. It's the ownership group. It's not Chaim Bloom. I'm excited for what Chaim Bloom can do here. But the question is going to be, will ownership actually give him the ability to make all the moves? And will they not say, hey, we got to do this, that, and that. We got to bring some intrigue back. We got to get the fans back. We got to have some splashy signings like Hanley Ramirez and Pablo Sandoval back in the day. That's my one fear. 617-779-7937 is the number. Let's get to Steve. He is in Belrico. What's up, Steve?
Hey, what's going on, Brian? Hey, I know you're talking about Mookie. Can I throw something out there with Brady instead?
Brady's always on the table, Steve. Come on, you know that.
I know. I know. But, yeah, I mean, you just started talking Brady earlier.
Sure.
When you first met.
Yeah, go ahead.
But anyway, how come he's skating on this whole thing? You know, after he got rid of Garoppolo, I think that's where it all went bad for them. I think Brady still has something against Belichick. I really do. I mean, right after the Garoppolo trade, it was the Philly Super Bowl, and it was, I know, there's no way Brady's over it. I mean, you might think so, but I don't. And I think that when people say that Belichick tried, you know, you had the second round pick for, you know, for Sanu and, mm-hmm. and Antonio Brown. No, they late in the dollar short. What, when he's 42, halfway mid-season, he scrambled for Sanu?
Right, Steve. What really happened was the Belichick era came down to the offseason, the draft, and as you mentioned, the in-season trade was not good. Like if you compare him to Emmanuel Sanders, who went to San Francisco, the Antonio Brown thing was almost pure luck that he would get in this argument and threaten the GM of the Raiders, Mike Mayock. That was lucky you even had him for 1 week, and you could have realized that that guy was going to be a head case with this team, although it wasn't like a risky move. But the fact that they missed out on all their targets in the offseason, and then it seems like they drafted the one receiver out of college last year that wasn't good in the NFL. That's where Belichick messed this whole thing up last year, because you can say, all right, he tried to upgrade in free agency. He tried to upgrade at the draft. He tried to upgrade at the trading deadline. But the reality of this situation is he missed on all those players.
He was on vacation. And you know, that's what the story was. He was on vacation in Barbados. And, you know, I don't see how Brady can't be upset about that. As far as, because after the Garoppolo trade, as far as I'm concerned, Belichick has watched his offense really dwindle down to crumbs. And, I mean, what has he done?
Steve, you know what kind of aggravated me about Belichick last year? And maybe what? It's just me, but one of the things that aggravated me about Belichick last year, it seemed like he was so happy winning the way that they were winning, like where it was basically the defense was leading the team. It seemed like he was all in with that type of philosophy, if you will. And it was almost as like you looked at the offense, it was so bad. And Belichick seemed so happy when they're winning these close games against the Eagles and the offense was just not performing at a high level. I've never seen him so happy at the podium as he was last year.
Okay, all right. Can I ask you one question before this is over? Now, since the Garoppolo trade, do you think Belichick holds it against Brady, or Brady had something to do with all
yes.
this? He had something to do with it. Do you think that Belichick holds something against Brady because he had to get rid of Garoppolo, and Belichick is kind of, I mean, that's a conspiracy theory kind of thing, where Belichick has, you know, has...
Yeah, Steve, I appreciate the phone call. His line's open if you want to grab it at 617-779-7937. I don't know if it's against Brady, but it's definitely against Kraft making to make that trade. Because think about it, there's no other way to break it down. He traded Jimmy Garoppolo, who, remember, before the draft, Adam Schefter said he wouldn't trade Jimmy Garoppolo for four first-round picks. The Browns were interested at the draft. That was the time to move on from the player in terms of getting the most value back. But think about where Belichick traded Garoppolo. One of his friends is Mike Shanahan, because Mike Shanahan was one of the only coaches around the league that actually stuck up for Bill Belichick during Spygate, the original Spygate, right? So he likes Mike Shanahan. He knows Mike Shanahan's smart. He also knows that Kyle Shanahan is a very intelligent football coach. So all he got back was a second-round draft pick, and he also sent him to his friend's kid, who's considered to be one of the great offensive minds in the NFL, so he could be set up for success. And the other thing, when you're looking at the Jimmy Garoppolo angle, is he was texting Jimmy Garoppolo after games. Bill Belichick's coaching the Patriots, and he's texting Jimmy Garoppolo after games. That was the report. He was actually texting Jimmy Garoppolo after Jimmy Garoppolo was winning games. He just wanted Jimmy Garoppolo to succeed. Because think about Bill. When he's done with a player, he doesn't care. He'll trade him wherever. He traded, and look, Chandler Jones has had a great run in Arizona. He's been one of the best pass rushers in the NFL, but he traded him to Arizona. That's not a great franchise. He doesn't care. He sent Lawyer Malloy to the Buffalo Bills. He never cares about the player. And in this particular case, he actually legitimately cared about where Jimmy Garoppolo was going to land. It wasn't about the business. It wasn't about what was best for the New England Patriots. It was, hey, how can I make sure Jimmy Garoppolo goes to a destination where he's going to succeed long term? Because I almost feel like Belichick thinks, okay, that's basically a check in my legacy, if you will, if Jimmy Garoppolo turns out to be this all-time great quarterback. And oh, by the way, I think the guy's completely overrated. That's a discussion for another day. The example of that would be the fourth quarter in the Super Bowl. He was horrible, and everybody blamed Shanahan. Well, Kyle Shanahan drew up a touchdown to Emmanuel Sanders at the end of the game. Garoppolo missed it. He also dialed up a play where George Kittle was wide open in the middle of the field, and Jimmy Garoppolo missed it. Let's get to Steve. He's in Portsmouth. What's up, Steve?
Hey, what's up, man? It's just pretty awesome to hear your take on Chaim Bloom. You know, I feel like everyone I've talked to, everywhere I've looked, you know, everyone's been trashing the guy for the Mookie trade and saying that it was such a bad, you know, bad deal. And I just am not in that camp at all. I you needed to get rid of Mookie. You know, $420 million, never mind the albatross that was David Price. Like, so I'm glad that that's over with. You know, even though they're paying some of his salary. And I love what they got in return. You know, I love Jeter Downs. I think that he's going to be a player. Well, I just love the future.
Yeah, and Steve, well, here's the other thing. How can anybody blame Chaim Bloom for the trade? Like, if people are getting on Chaim Bloom for the return, it should be, if you're mad with the return, okay? And that's fair if people are upset that you only got Verdugo and Jeter Downs, right? Like, you didn't get a huge package for Mookie Betts. But if people are actually mad about that, you're pointing the finger in the wrong direction. It should be on the ownership group who basically made it so that Chaim Bloom had to trade Mookie Betts, and the ownership group said, hey, we got to get under the CBT, so David Price is going to be part of the equation. So Chaim Bloom was basically in a situation where he couldn't win the trade because of all the restrictions the Red Sox ownership group put on him.
Yeah, I guess that's the problem when the ownership group owns the newspaper. You know, they own the media. They're going to put it on Chaim Bloom. And that's, I mean, he's getting paid to probably take this. He knew, like you said, he knew what, you know, he knew the situation he was getting put in. He knew it wasn't going to be, people weren't going to be receptive to it. And, you know, I just think that, like this team, I think that they're going to contend. You know, I think earlier in the show you might have said that they weren't a World Series contender. And I kind of disagree. I think that they're going to surprise some teams. I think they're, you know, they might be a pitcher short, and the sale, you know, stuff does, you know, it does ring a little scary to me. And I liked your point on, you know, the sales, you know, sales having to change his, you know, his style of pitching and, you know, having to figure out how to win that way. I think that would be a good route, and I hope we'll see some of that this year, you know?
Yeah, and I appreciate the phone call, Steve. If you want to grab his line, it's open at 617-779-7937. That's the problem for this team. I believe in the lineup. I believe in the players in the lineup. I believe in Devers. I believe in JD Martinez. I believe in Xander Bogaerts. It's going to be a good offense. The question that I have is the pitching staff. And really, when you're going into the season, outside of Erod, who do you really trust in this pitching staff? If you look at it, the guy that you signed, Martin Perez, you're just hoping that guy can eat up some innings. He was one of the worst pitchers in all of Major League Baseball. He's basically like, you just went out and you got yourself a new Rick Porcello. And I loved Rick Porcello as a Red Sox. Now, last year, he fell off and all that. But Porcello went out there and he did his job every day, okay? He went out there, he was giving you 200 innings a season, and I know he won the Cy Young, and we can get into a whole debate on whether or not he deserved it. But the point being, I liked Porcello when he was here. He was never the frontline starter, but he was a guy that was a dependable starter, and then last year everything fell off, and he was one of the worst pitchers in Major League Baseball. That's essentially what Martin Perez was brought in here to do. He's one of the worst pitchers in Major League Baseball last year. So you add him, and then you look at the other elements to the pitching staff. Okay, Erod had a really good season, and I'm optimistic that he's going to have another good season next year. It looks like Erod finally figured it out, right? And then, and he's still relatively young, so it's not like I shouldn't say finally, but he had a really good season. He took a step forward. But outside of Rodriguez, who do you trust in the pitching staff? Nathan Eovaldi's got that big contract, $17 million per season. He's got 3 years remaining on that. And Nathan Eovaldi last year had a 5.99 ERA. He was absolutely atrocious last year. And you can say, oh, well, he was dealing with an injury. Well, he's dealt with injuries like his whole career. That's part of the reason why the contract never made sense to begin with. But you tried Nathan Eovaldi as a starter at the beginning of the season. He was horrible. Nathan Eovaldi comes back from the injury. Hey, you know what we have? Nobody else has a pitcher coming out of the bullpen throwing 100. We get a high-level closer in Nathan Eovaldi. He can be a closer. He can be a setup man. We can use him out of the bullpen. Well, guess what? As a reliever last year, Nathan Eovaldi was horrible. And then they put him back in the starting role. He was bad again. I would point this out with Nathan Eovaldi. He had one really good stretch during his career, and that was the postseason run where the Red Sox won in 2018. And hey, everybody's going to love Nathan Eovaldi for that. But the reality of the situation is this guy for his career has an ERA north of 4. He's never really been a good pitcher, and we saw that last season. So I have no faith whatsoever that Nathan Eovaldi's having a good year. So Eovaldi's not going to be good. Martin Perez is just not a good pitcher. And then the biggest question mark really is, what do you get out of Chris Sale? Is Chris Sale going to be somebody that first of all goes out there every fifth day? And what Chris Sale are we going to see? Are we going to see a Chris Sale that is actually one of the better pitchers in Major League Baseball? Or are we going to see the same Chris Sale we saw last year that didn't have the stuff on a start-to-start basis? And like we've seen for the past 3 years, at the end of the year, he was dealing with some sort of injury. And I'm still not convinced that his shoulder's right. I know last year was the elbow, but I don't think his shoulder was right all season long. So why all of a sudden is that going to change? So outside of Erod, you have question marks about everybody in this rotation. And that's why, to me, I just don't see the Red Sox being any sort of contender whatsoever, because there's so many damn question marks with the pitching staff. And then also, you look at the freaking division. Gerrit Cole is going to be at the top of the Yankees rotation, not to mention the fact they're going to get a healthy Luis Severino. And by the way, they have a better lineup than you. The Yankees are just going to be an absolute juggernaut. They're going to run away with this division by like 15, 20 games. Let's get to Mike in Holyoke. What's up, Mike?
Glenn Ordway, Lou Minoni, and Christian Ford.
I just want to find out, am I on?
Yeah, yeah, we got you, Mike. What's going on, man?
Okay, yeah. You know, I'm a longtime listener, mostly during the daytime. But my thought was, I've heard that Chaim Bloom was only an assistant and maybe another assistant to the GM.
Yeah, but so, I mean, he's in the room and part of all these trades and player acquisitions, all these things that they make, Mike. Chaim Bloom is part of the process.
Yeah, but he's only a small part of the process when you look at it, right?
No, he's a major part of the process. That's why the Red Sox hired him, because he's considered to be a genius in the sport.
Oh, so then why didn't they just have him as the GM then and make the decisions? There's somebody makes the decision above him, right?
Well, I mean, he's the GM now. So what's the point, Mike? You're concerned about Bloom?
Well, no, I'm not concerned. I actually like it. I like the hiring. But I also think that, you know, the way you're talking is more like he is the top person that made all the decisions. He probably brought up some proposals, and they took them, but we don't know that, do we?
Right, but we do know this, Mike, and I appreciate the phone call. His line's open at 617-779-7937. This is what we do know about Chaim Bloom. He has been working in the Tampa Bay Rays organization since 2005. He started as an intern. He worked underneath Andrew Friedman, who in my mind is the best executive in all of Major League Baseball right now. He learned from him, and if you look at the way that the Rays were able to basically make moves, not to mention he was a big part of player development. He was in charge of that for a number of years. Using very few resources to get this type of success that the Rays have been able to have and having to let all your good players essentially go. You had to get rid of David Price when David Price was David Price, like Cy Young winner David Price. Chris Archer had to get rid of him. You had to get rid of Evan Longoria. Basically, you can't pay any of these guys. And he's been in that organization for all those years, making all those moves, developing players. He talks about developing guys in the farm system. That's what they need to do, is build a better farm system. This is why at this time, this is the type of executive that you needed to basically put in place here. 617-779-7937 is the number. Got a couple of minutes to work with here as we get ready for the All-Star game in the NBA tonight. And oh, by the way, I am not sure how this is going to go tonight because they've changed up the format. Each quarter is like an individual game. I'm hoping that it's better than it's been previous seasons. It can't be worse. So at least trying something different, to Adam Silver's credit, maybe it's going to give you at least a better game. Maybe it's going to be a little bit competitive because the past couple of years, it's been unbearable. Let's get to Doug in a car. What's up, Doug?
Hey, Brian, how you doing? I just heard you say that, in your opinion, the Red Sox are not going to be able to contend this season.
Yep.
So I'm curious, you know, we're a big market team. We usually, you know, want to spend money, although it doesn't seem like they want to anymore. But we're usually, you know, want to contend. We want to go out and get players. My question to you is, in worst case scenario, if Sale gets hurt, if Ivaldi gets hurt, you know, everything falls apart.
Yep.
Do you think this club would ever take on more of a Kansas City Royals kind of mentality and call up our kids and just see what they've got? We've got this center fielder down in Double A, Jared Duran. Cassis, the first baseman. Noah Song, if he can get out of his Navy commitment. I follow the minor leagues.
Well, I appreciate.
I'd like to see these guys get a chance, you know?
Yeah, I appreciate the phone call, Doug. So you're saying, like, if the team sucked at the end of the season, will they bring guys up? I would expect that that would be the case. But Heimblum also said he's not rushing guys up. That's something that they really did with the Rays. They didn't rush any guys up, so they're not going to just rush guys up to rush him up. He's not going to bring guys up until they're 100% ready. That's something he really emphasized the other day. All right, thanks to Brian and Bridget for producing tonight. Coming up next, NBA All-Star Game coverage. Team Giannis against Team LeBron. I don't know who to cheer for because Kemba's on Team Giannis and Tatum's on Team LeBron. I'm going to cheer for Team Giannis because that means I'm going to be cheering against LeBron. So I guess I'm cheering against Tatum. It's all confusing. Anyway, the All-Star game is next right here on WEA.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.